This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined. This is Landry Football on Radio Influence. The only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
And away we go on the Thursday, December 7th, edition of the Landry Football Podcast. We pause to remember it is Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th, and want to always, in the forefront of our mind, have our people that protect us and fight for us every day and allow us to do what we do. We always think about them, pray for them, and particularly this time of year, we want to give our thoughts and prayers and shout-outs to all the men and women of the armed forces. We got a lot to get to today. We want to recap the Tennessee coaching search, the Arkansas coaching search, not the whole thing, but why they went the direction that they did, the latest on Oregon, some other news and notes going around. Cleveland Browns fired Sashi Brown today. We'll get into that and their GM search, Giants GM search. Got a good question that was sent in. And by the way, if you want something answered here on this podcast, find us on the website and send us an email. Just sit to ask Chris, and you can find us there and contact Chris and send me an email and I'll address it here. We'll talk a little bit Army Navy. And time permitting, we want to get into some NFL games. But a lot to get to today. I do remind everybody that I mentioned it's December 7th. I've mentioned this story before, but it is topical as Arkansas announces their coach today. Tennessee is also announcing their coach today as an Alabama assistant getting the job. It reminds me to just tell you how things have changed and the world has changed. It was couple of days prior, as we mentioned, in 1941, Pearl Harbor took place. But 2 days before Pearl Harbor, which was December 5th, December 4th, I think it was actually the date, Bear Bryant, the Vanderbilt assistant coach, had accepted the offer to become the head coach at Arkansas. He, of course, grew up in Fordyce, Arkansas, went to school at Alabama. We all know, but he accepted the job at Arkansas, and it was 2-3 days later in which Pearl Harbor broke out, and then everyone was called to war, and it never materialized, of course, but just a reminder of where we've come, where things have been, and where we are now, and how times have changed as we talk about big money buyouts, the popularity of the sport, social media following. There was a time where none of that existed, and it was just old football coaches. But yet, they were still doing the same things. They were coaching ball. They were trying to get head coaching jobs from being an assistant. You know, that element was always the same. It's the extraneous stuff that covers a sport that's made it quite different. So, Arkansas gets their guy in Chad Morris. We've mentioned it. And if you follow us on Twitter, and we recommend that you do, follow us on Twitter at Landry Football for all the latest information as we provide things that come up in around the coaching world, but also give you some nuggets as we tend to do from time to time at LandryFootball.com. We try to keep you up to date. It's a way to keep in touch with you, and we want to do that. Of course, follow us on Landry Football always. But as we've kind of reported and kept you updated at LandryFootball.com on Twitter, Chad Morris was the target. Once Gus Malzahn was clearly the target as the number one guy to bring home the native son, that did not work out as he managed to stay at Auburn and got a new deal there. Chad Morris was very high on Arkansas's list, but also remember that the people that really liked Gus Malzahn, Gus Malzahn has a very close relationship with Chad Morris and recommended him highly, as did Dabo Swinney. So there was connection there just from the recommendations. That's the first thing that led to the hire. It's one of the things. The second thing is they hired a new athletic director in Hunter Yurovich, who comes over from Houston, where he was an associate athletic director at Houston when they actually missed out on Chad Morris, who had actually taken the SMU job, and Houston ended up hiring Tom Herman off of Urban Meyer's staff at Ohio State. Of course, Tom's at Texas now, but there was a belief in Chad Morris from the athletic director at Houston, now at Arkansas. So now you're putting it all together, and it's like everybody's on the same page. There really was not another option. There is a lot of reports about Mike Norvell being an option, and he has got a background, played at Central Arkansas. But it was once the process became clearly Chad Morris-driven, you may have noticed, as we also reported, if you follow the dots, you kind of learn how some of the coaching search business works. Mike Norvell re-upped with Memphis. Well, he re-upped. Memphis wanted to keep him, of course, but he also knew that he wasn't going to get the Arkansas job. It wasn't like he took his name out of the Arkansas job. Arkansas clearly were going down the Chad Morris path, and so he re-ups at Memphis, decides to stay there. He had nothing really else going. And if you look at the other jobs, he wasn't in the Tennessee job. And the best jobs around the country are gone at this point. He was not someone that was going to be considered at Oregon, for example. So if you kind of follow the dots, and if you don't, even if you don't know what's going on behind the scenes, if you follow the dots, you can start to put it together to some degree. So as this process kind of unfolds, Chad, who I can tell you that I've communicated with and had interest in the Ole Miss job, had interest in moving on from SMU. Liked it there, yes, but knew that it was time to move on. Knew that it's there are challenges there that are different. He's a Texas guy, high school coach in Texas. You probably know the story by now. Great high school coach, bringing in that dynamic. Why was he the guy? Why was he so well-liked? Well, I told you the connections, but why did they like him? And why is it a fit? Why is it potentially, if it doesn't work, why wouldn't it work? We'll get into that right now. Well, first of all, one of the big issues at Arkansas and one of the dynamics, you can go ahead and hire a coach and you can have a vision. And that's great. Everyone has to have a vision. But can you make the vision work? Brett Bielema is hired from Wisconsin by Jeff Long to Arkansas just 5 years ago. And he's got a vision of coming in. Big Ten guy, successful at Wisconsin. Guy went to multiple Rose Bowls at Wisconsin. I mean, are you kidding me? This guy did a bang-up job there. Why didn't it work at Arkansas? Well, at Wisconsin, you get a certain type of player, you coach him up, and the west of the Big Ten is very winnable. With Nebraska not being what Nebraska has typically been, and maybe Scott Frost will change that, you don't have, you know, Iowa's a solid program, but you don't have elite programs in the west of the Big Ten. You go to the SEC, it doesn't translate unless you're able to do the things that the teams in the SEC West do better than they do them. So what is Brett Bielema? Well, going to come in and he's going to build a program, this was his plan, that looked like Alabama and LSU. It's great. Power run, play action pass, great defense. That was his plan. It's one problem. Didn't recruit very well. Didn't recruit the state of Texas well. Didn't have a lot of the connections. You know, recruiting was not his strength. You're limited what you can get at Wisconsin. You got to find key guys that fit what you do there. But you go to Arkansas, now you're going to try to beat LSU and you're going to try to beat Alabama and you don't have the personnel to do it. The scheme doesn't win. It's the players that you teach within the scheme that win. Scheme helps. You know, consider scheme like a condiment to a great sandwich. It makes it taste better. But the meat in the sandwich are the players. So as that process failed because they could not recruit anywhere near the level of LSU or Alabama, and not that they were expected to be on a par, but if you're going to be competitive with an Auburn and consistently beat, you know, competitive with A&M, consistently beat the Mississippi schools, you better recruit a lot better than they did. Well, I mentioned that as an intro to why they like Chad Morris so much. Chad Morris is known as a great recruiter. He's got the connections in the Texas high schools, but that's one thing. You can be a high school coach and know those guys. Doesn't mean you're a great recruiter. He proved he was a great recruiter throughout his stops. You know, Tulsa gets the big job at Clemson. That's where he really kind of proved himself as a recruiter. He went and he identified Deshaun Watson, recruited him, and got him to come. When a lot of folks thought he was going elsewhere, he got him. And he's done it with a number of other players. So that's going to be the challenge and the mission. Be very competitive in the state of Texas. Go in and certainly recruit the players in Arkansas. That relationship is big. Go into like Tulsa, the Tulsa, Oklahoma area. There's always some good players that Arkansas has some connections with. You want to work that. There's some spots in North Louisiana where you can have some success, but you got to go into Texas and you got to go get some big time playmakers there. And you got to get some linemen, not just offensive linemen, but some big war daddies on the defensive line and get that fixed, because that's where it's going to make a difference if he can do it. Now, recruiting should be better. Offensively, they'll be fun to watch, folks. They'll score points. It'll take them a while to get the system in place, but they will score. They'll spread you out. They'll be up-tempo, and they're going to be a tough defensive game plan for folks. They'll be fun to watch, Arkansas fans. Now, are they going to be good enough defensively? Well, let me just tell you that up-tempo offenses, which they're going to play fast under Chad, are not going to have great defenses typically. Why? Because you're on the field way too much. So the definition of what we would consider great defenses would be a defense that can stop the run on early downs and get off the field on third downs and, you know, hold you to 24, 28 points a game so that the offense can score 30 or more. That's going to be how their game plan is going to be in structure. So how will it work? Listen, it's going to come down to recruiting and how well they're able to do that. Tennessee gets their man in Jeremy Pruitt. How is this going to fit? Why did it go this way? Well, we all know the dysfunction that was the Tennessee search. Too many cooks in the kitchen, too many people with their own agendas. It's water under the bridge, but yet it is something that, because Philip Fulmer is in a position as an athletic director, doesn't mean that he's ultimately the most qualified to lead this athletic department into the future. I think short term it's fine, and we'll see. I think that the selling point of having Philip there is a good one as opposed to the dysfunction. At least they're a little bit more aligned and organized and playing nice in Knoxville up on the hill than they were before. Jeremy Pruitt fits the profile of what I thought and what I said Philip all along wanted. Defensive-oriented coach, tough, disciplined, straighten things out in the program, no nonsense, put together a really good staff, have a good vision of how to do that, how to put together a good support staff. I believe, because I knew it was important to him, that Tennessee is willing to make the commitments with the support staff. We'll see if they follow through with that. Hopefully they will. If they don't, then really the head coach is going to be limited and handcuffed to some degree. I think they need to do that. I think they need to get a larger support staff and allow Jeremy Pruitt to do it in the vision that he's learned at Alabama and other stops, but mainly Alabama under Nick Saban. Really well organized, really easy to get along with type of personality and every man's type of guy. fits the Tennessee profile. I'm going to tell you, this may surprise you, as a football coach, a lot of the same qualities that a Greg Schiano had. The difference, this guy's an old Southern boy that's going to relate to the Tennessee folks, whereas the Jersey boy would not have been well-liked, I can tell you. Now, the product on the field is likely going to be somewhat similar. Jeremy is the first-time head coach. Of course, Greg already has done it at Rutgers. But Jeremy's going to have a really good game plan of putting together a staff, and he's an outstanding, tireless recruiter. I think a better recruiter than somebody like Schiano, and somebody that has better connections in the recruiting area. So it's a better hire all around than Schiano. And ironically, it takes all this time to get to somebody that was really a good fit. Now, I wouldn't be saying that if they just hired a Tennessee guy to say, oh, we're going to bring it back in the family, and then you don't have a very good coach, and then you're having to turn around and fire someone in the family, you know, down the road, and you have hard feelings. No, you hire the best coach, and if you have the connection, that's just a bonus. Someone that's going to get the defense fixed, get personnel on the defense, get the running game going, and obviously put some components together as a program to kind of take that next step is what he needs to do. There is some comparisons, in my view, in terms of style and organizational skills of Jeremy as well as Kirby Smart. But Tennessee fans, I'm telling you, if you think that Jeremy Pruitt's going to do at Tennessee what Kirby did at Georgia in the similar time frame, you're kidding yourself. Georgia's much better organized. Their whole program is better organized. That problem at Georgia was more of an attitude issue, more of a toughness issue that needed to be corrected, but it had a lot of talent in it. And Kirby, the first year was a rough patch because the kids resisted, had some tough moments, lost some games they probably shouldn't have. We see where Georgia is now. That was a good program that needed some tough love and got it. Tennessee needs tough love. They need some players. All the talk about great recruiting with Butch Jones, it was good recruiting. It was better recruiting than they had had for some time. Stability was put into the program. However, they do not look like Georgia in any way, shape, or form, and they're not close to being that good. So what are the expectations for Jeremy? Listen, if he can get them to bowl eligibility next year and win six games, guy's done a great job. Okay, and then with another recruiting class the next year, two recruiting classes, then I think you can look at him possibly getting to eight the second year, you know. And this is what I'm looking at the schedules I'm just talking about in terms of that. Then by the third year, I could see that maybe, you know, 9-10. That's where you start to see it. But this is a longer project than Kirby Smart's had at Georgia. So keep that in mind. I think Tennessee fans at least would like to see a team that is a little more consistent, that doesn't blow leads, that doesn't have awful game management situations. Those things need to be improved upon, and I would suspect that Jeremy's going to do a very good job in those areas. The other areas, I think he's going to be a lot better, and I think the program is headed in the right direction. Willie Taggart's putting his staff together at Florida State, beginning to anyway. We're seeing some movements from some of the guys at FSU going with Jimbo. We'll see more of that coming forward. You will see guys like Damian Craig go over to Texas A&M with Jimbo. And you're going to see, you know, a number of guys make the move to Florida State with Willie Taggart. A lot of it's going to be held up with the coaching of the bowl game. And so we'll see what Jim Leavitt does there. I still hear he's likely headed to Tallahassee after Oregon's bowl game, but we shall see how that plays out. What is Oregon going to do? But listen, I tell you, Mario Cristobal makes a lot of sense if they want to keep the program stability along the lines of what Willie Taggart has done. Maybe keep some of the staff member. Mario's ready for a head coaching job somewhere. He's more of a, you know, he's a Miami guy. He's a Florida guy, yes, but he's a good national recruiter. I mean, that's his strength. He's actually a better head coach guy than he is a coordinator or a line coach. His strength is as a recruiter. That's a strong possibility, and he's the interim head coach now. I think that they will look at some other options and then see how Mario, visit with Mario and see how he does in the interim role and make a decision there. Another guy to keep an eye on is Brian Harsin, the head coach at Boise, who is an outstanding coach, was very high on their list when they hired him. He's a good recruiter. Now, it's different recruiting to Boise. He's an outstanding coach. He's better in terms of development and coaching than, say, Mario Cristobal is, but he's not as dynamic a recruiter as Cristobal. So Harsin's got connections out west. Something to consider. Same thing with Jeff Tedford, who is also somebody that Oregon's going to look at. Former Cal coach, now doing a good job at Fresno State. Jeff's a really good coach, can coach him up, but can he be the dynamic recruiter that can go into California and be very competitive against the USC's, the UCLA's of the world in recruiting? That's debatable. I thought that Jeff did a nice job at Cal getting some players, a lot of guys that were fits for them, not what you'd call a dynamic recruiter. So we'll see how it plays out. I'm not hearing much of a play of Kevin Sumlin in the mix. I don't know that Justin Wilcox, who would be a really good fit, connection to the program, knows the program, coming from Cal, not hearing him as much there. I don't really see a lot of legs to the Mike Leach situation. I'll let you know if that changes, but right now it's just been media speculation and not something that's real inside the coaching search world. So in the end, I think we'll start to see that play out. Now on to the NFL, where we've got moves. As you know, the New York Giants made a move this week, firing Ben McAdoo as the head coach, and also Jerry Reese is their GM. We mentioned to you, we think the best guy for that GM spot is Dave Gettleman. Great football guy, been with the Giants organization, did a good job in Carolina. Tough, hard nose, the exact ideal fit for what the Giants need. Love to see him hire his head coach and run his program there without the interference of the instability of what is the Carolina Panthers and Jerry Richardson and how they operate. The Cleveland Browns made what should have been done a long time ago official in firing Sashi Brown. Sashi was it's an understatement to say it was a failed experiment of Jimmy Haslam, an absolutely awful hire, a guy with a lawyer background who I've known for years, has no clue about football, and you make him the top football guy. And he's going to put analytics guys under this, and they're going to try to reinvent the wheel without knowing anything about football. And draft picks mean more than players when you really don't understand that the only reason draft picks are valuable is because you get players with them. And as they pass over Carson Wentz, as they pass over Deshaun Watson, as they pass over Derek Carr, as they pass over Dak Prescott, still looking for a quarterback, and all those other teams at least have their quarterbacks of the future, look pretty good. This roster is not any better than it was when they took it over. In fact, it's worse. The one-loss record's not any better than when they took it over. In fact, it's worse. It's been a disaster. It's been dysfunctional. And I think, as you often see, you make a different move, the move that's the opposite of what you had. So look for them to hire a football guy again. Early word as John Dorsey, as a very highly thought of candidate. John is a great football guy, great evaluator of talent, did a great job in Green Bay, working under the Ron Wolf system, knows that system, did a really good job in Kansas City, a little rough around the edges, not the best at dealing with a lot of the day-to-day you know, intricacies of the office. He's a football guy and be a good fit. Now, is Jimmy Haslam bright enough to figure this out? And what is he doing there? I don't want to, it's hard to give Jimmy Haslam the benefit of the doubt because he's now made like now five hires since 2012. I mean, it's every year and a half he fires everybody, cleans house. Now, he's already decided that Hugh Jackson is coming in, or excuse me, is going to remain as the head coach in 2018. Well, things are subject to change. If the GM comes in and says, this is not going to work, we need to move forward, that's always subject to change. Let me give you an indication of what I've heard and what I believe to be true as it relates to Jimmy Haslam on keeping Hugh Jackson. I think a couple of things have taken place. Hugh Jackson, I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's done a very good job coaching this team this year. He's not. The staff has not. But of the two, they've been clearly better than the front office, clearly. That's not even debatable in a football evaluation, an intelligent football evaluation. I think around the league, as Jimmy Haslam has done his homework, he's learned through people that know better, a lot more football than he does, that this front office has been so dysfunctional that it undermines the ability of a coach to do a good job. And the botch trade here and there and passing over quarterbacks, you got to remember, Jimmy Haslam sat in those meetings when he heard Hugh Jackson say, Carson Wentz and Jared Goff can play. Deshaun Watson can play. We need him. And then saw his front office people say, no, that's, we need to trade him for more picks. Jimmy Haslam saw and heard that, and he's seen what a disaster that's been. So he feels like his head coach hadn't been given a fair shot. And I think in an era where he's constantly been unstable as an owner and firing everybody left and right, that he feels like he wants to create some stability by giving Hugh Jackson a chance. I think that's what's going on. I hope that's what's going on and not, listen, I'm going to hire the head coach, and I'm going to hire a GM, and I'm going to meddle in this or that. Hopefully the GM comes in and will be given the power to run everything football-wise, coaching, scouting, and make the decisions there. That's what needs to be done. I think hiring a GM and maybe getting somebody like John Dorsey, who ironically is available, they could bring him in now. If that's who they want, they need to get it locked up soon and let John Dorsey evaluate this team, the remaining, well, it's unlikely to happen this week. So let's just say the remaining 3 weeks of the season, let him evaluate. Let that decision be made that way. And then step back as an owner and let a football guy run it. It's the best thing that they've done for some time, if they can do it that way. If Jimmy's going to be meddlesome and Jimmy's going to want to make decisions, we've seen it's not worked. And I think that if Jimmy's ego cannot be reined in at this point, then they have no future. You have no future with this guy as your owner because he's proven to be a complete mess up at this point. So hopefully for those loyal Brown fans, Jim Haslam will do the right thing finally and figure it out. All right, I've got a question that I want to address. And again, remind you that if you have a question, send it to us. Go to LandryFootball.com, hit contact Chris, send us a question, I'll address it here in a podcast. John says, I heard your podcast discussing Alabama and Ohio State, and with your background, can you address why the college football playoff system could not institute a system like the NFL model where subjectivity is not a part of the postseason field selection process? Why I like the NFL so much better, because human opinion plays zero role. Well, first of all, there's a problem with your theory in that there are way more college programs. The NFL is a different animal with 32 teams. If it were 32 teams and you did that, you could do that. And if you're a fan of the NFL model, you're right, you like that. But let me just tell you, as someone who has worked now for 30 years and spent time at the college and the NFL level, let me just say this. I think both are great, but both are unique. I would not want college football to be like the NFL, and I would not want the NFL to be like college football. They should be different. And the reason is the NFL is getting really interesting now. And while 16 games are not a lot, if you go 12-4, probably in good shape to win your division, most divisions, most years. So it de-emphasizes the importance of each individual regular season game. In essence, yes, they're important, but they're not critical. You lose two games to start the season like the Saints, it's not the end of the world. You lose two seasons to start the college football season, you're basically out of the playoffs. So what it does, what makes college football unique is the regular season is the most important in all of sports. No sport does the regular season matter like it does in college football. In other sports, you spend the regular season to eliminate teams to get to the playoffs. So if you're a pro model guy, I could see how you'd like that. But if you've been in a background of college football, you know what's important is you line up, and if you're Ohio State playing Oklahoma, that's a game that's likely going to determine whether you can be a player or not nationally, and likely is going to put you on the outside looking in. Now, in this case, Ohio State, if they don't lose to Iowa, they probably get in even with the loss to Oklahoma. But you see how important those regular season games are. You don't have that in the NFL. So that's the difference. Now, John also asks, winning a conference championship in one league, he's recording what I said. Winning a conference championship in one league doesn't mean you're better than the team that doesn't win their conference. What do you say to those of us who like the NFL model, where the AFC West is not very good, but you win your division and get in because the divisions are treated equal? Again, the NFL is built towards playoffs and winning your division. College football is a regular season sport. It's about picking the best teams, not picking the best conference champions, because what if the second place team in any given conference is better than the champion of all the other conferences, much less just one or two others? The model's different. So I know what your point is we'll make the college model like the NFL model. Well, most people don't want that. Most people don't want to have a college season where you play a bunch of games, and the games don't nearly mean as much as they do now, because all that's going to matter is you win your conference and you get in, and then you're just like every other sport that's playoff-based. College basketball is a one-month sport. We can talk about how great it is and how you can watch the season and January and February and all this. That's fine. And you got to win enough games to at least get into the tournament. I know that. But really, not any individual game matters nearly as much, because as long as you get into the postseason, it doesn't matter. That's not what college football is about. Every game is critical to your season, or you might not make it. So that's what makes college football best. So he wanted to say, what are your thoughts on an NFL player style in college football? Is it possible? Sure, it's possible. It's absolutely possible. But it's not really what you want, and it's quite frankly what you absolutely don't want. I don't want college football to be like the NFL. I don't want the NFL to be like college football. Now, let me say this. To your point of the NFL, you have teams that make the playoffs are not as good, and I knew that was going to happen once we went to the 8-14 divisions. Now, in my view, if you wanted to make it better, you'd probably have 8-team divisions, but if you did, you had 8 teams in one division and you had 4 divisions, the problem would be that you would have to play everybody in your division, and that would mean less games outside of conference and out on the other the conference as well. So I understand what they're doing, but the reality is you can win the division and be a 7-9 team, win your division. It's to be, that gets criticized a lot in the NFL, and rightly so. I understand it, but I don't think it's a good thing. I think having college football result in the end of putting the best teams in is the way to go. And I've said it, I'll say it again. Put the best teams in college football in a playoff bowl game, not in a playoff, but in a bowl game, and then pick the four teams after that. So, like, for example, this year you could have maybe a Clemson and a USC and maybe an Oklahoma and an Auburn, a Georgia and a Wisconsin and Alabama and Ohio State in bowl games, something along those lines. Put them in bowl games. Then pick the four teams after that. Put a couple of other bowl, and it doesn't mean that those winners absolutely are in, because what if you can put, it's not that it says you can't put in this particular year a Central Florida in one of those games, and maybe put a Central Florida against a Wisconsin or an Alabama or like they're playing in Auburn right now. You could put a Notre Dame or a Stanford, or you can put another couple of teams in there. And in theory, if you've got a one or two loss team that's really impressive in the bowl games, they're eligible to be selected among the four best. I think that's the best way. So no, I don't agree with having an NFL style system, because an NFL style system for college football just simply means whoever gets hot at the end of the year and whoever wins your league, there's a lot more parity in the NFL than there is in college football. So you can look at the weaker leagues. They don't equate to best. They equate to just your best in your region. And I don't know that if we're going to pick the best teams, you got to let the best teams kind of come to the surface. And winning your league doesn't mean that you're one of the four best teams in the country. That is, to me, very, very evident. Army-Navy's playing this week, and I cannot tell you an Army-Navy game that I've anticipated as much in some time, just in terms of, first of all, I love the pageantry and I love what the game stands for, and I've been to many of them. By the way, it's a bucket list game. You should get to one of them if you have a chance. It's in Philly. But here's the other thing. For the past several years, the game itself is all about Navy. And can Army even compete? Last year, we saw the tide change a little bit. Army playing very well. Navy, not quite as good, not having that dominance at quarterback. It's affected them. Great performance. And then now, going in, it's basically, an even game. Don't know who's going to win it, but it should be competitive without a real favorite either way. Can't wait to watch it. All right. NFL game tonight. Maybe the game of the weekend, playing tonight. Very rarely do you get the Thursday night matchups where it's the best game. The Saints are in Atlanta to play the Falcons. And boy, is this a big game. The Saints can pretty much, for all intents and purposes, wrap up the NFC South with a win. It's a must win for Atlanta. Health of the Saints on defense, can they hold up in coverage? Can they get enough pass rush? You know, what has happened when Marshawn Lattimore has played at corner for the Saints, it's allowed them to bring their pressure packages from different positions, and he's holding up well. Without him, they can't cover well enough long enough. And when they bring extra pressure, good quarterbacks, passing quarterbacks, can beat them. And this is the case tonight. Atlanta is has a really good quarterback in Matt Ryan at home. Kind of like them here. The Saints can win this. It would be absolutely huge. How about Kansas City? Can they stop the Snide? 6 of 7 they've lost. Oakland comes into Kansas City. Both are tied at 6 and 6. Got to figure out how to play better defensively. They don't have much of a chance. Minnesota goes to Carolina. Well, people just not talking about the Vikings. Eagles are really good. Saints are really good. Rams are a great story. Vikings just kind of show up every week, play good defense, run the football well. Case Keenum's playing well. They win at home. They win on the road. They've beaten Atlanta. They've beaten the Rams. Got Carolina this week. Can basically knock Carolina out of it. hold on to home field advantage at the one spot, which they now hold. Interesting to see this game. Philadelphia goes to Los Angeles in a game that means an awful lot for the playoffs, for seeding. Huge. Philadelphia coming off of a tough loss to Seattle last week. The Rams playing well at home. Dealing with difficulties, obviously, in preparation. By the way, our hearts and prayers go out to everyone in the wildfires out in California, which are affecting certainly of no importance relative to what people are doing or dealing with losing their homes. But it's affected preparation. I know for UCLA bowl practices, for the Rams. So we've got our thoughts and prayers out for everyone. Ought to be a really good one. Seattle goes to Jacksonville. Jacksonville, their defense, their running game as well. Seattle, can they get a big win at home? I'm curious about their. Tennessee goes to Arizona. Can they take care of business and hold off Jacksonville? Going to be interesting to see there. So those are some of the key matchups. New England has got Miami on Monday night. Think they're able to take care of business there, I would think. You starting to get to the point now where you're looking at what other openings could be in the NFL, and we need to look out for Marvin Lewis at Cincinnati. That time may be coming to an end. I think we need to look at Denver, as John Elway's certainly not going to take any blame there. He's going to likely fire a head coach, Van Joseph. Tampa is going to be on a watch. Expect the Glazers to take their time, as they always do, and figure out what they want to do. And we'll see what happens in Chicago. We'll see what happens in Indianapolis. And we'll see if Bruce Arians wants to come back or not, health-wise. But some interesting storylines we'll follow for you here at LandryFootball.com and on the podcast here at Landry Football. Folks, that'll wrap it up for today. And we'll be back on Tuesday to break down the week that was in the NFL. And kind of get you towards the latest in college football as we get prepared for bowl games starting next Saturday, a week from this Saturday. And remember, recruiting is signing day, early signing day is fast approaching December 20th. So we'll keep you updated on all things college football, all things the NFL here at LandryFootball.com. Talk to you next time.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.